Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Exceptional, stunning, outstanding. Any other words to describe Man City Liverpool, Pete?
Good. It was good.
Welcome to the Football Ramble. It's Monday, the 11th of April. I'm Jules Breach.
I'm Pete Donaldson.
And I'm Lars Hjort.
Good. The football was good.
You warned me you were going to go off piste. You warned me you were going to attack me in the intro, and I wasn't ready. I forgot. Almost
I told
immediately.
You. I said, Pete, get ready. I'm going to throw you something.
I'm sorry.
I thought I'd buffer with throwing some low grade banter in between the warning. Yeah, the green room stuff. The stuff before the show was tepid from it. I think it's because they put the fake milk in my coffee, so I couldn't.
You've had oat milk and you're not happy, are you?
Lars has had some oat milk. He's not happy.
No, it wasn't good. But I will say to the listeners at home, I think hooking Jules up to some sort of turbine is a very viable solution to the energy crisis. Yeah. Because of just the burst of energy that was unleashed.
Is it my pink purple t-shirt?
It's your pink purple t-shirt.
I like it. It's like a pink lady kind of,
it's a little bit greasy.
Greasy. What?
Greasy.
You're calling me greasy.
Greasy.
I'm actually far from right now.
You need to be greasy because you are scaled.
I am like, my skin is like a snake right now. Yeah. The Caribbean tan is very, very quickly peeling off and it's depressing, to be honest.
I was quite pleased with my tan after like a few weeks away. And the first thing you say is coming, well, you're kind of holding on to your tan.
No,
Pete.
I said, nice to see both of us losing our tan.
Awful.
Well, aside from all of
I'm
that.
I'm going to impress Lars. I've never worked with him before.
Why not? I was going to say, this is the first three of us have been together in this room.
I'm going to show off so much, Jules. You're going to be so upset with me. I brought in all my pogs.
I did wonder why you came in shirtless. I thought that was a strange. You do look after yourself, Pete. No, I think that was strange.
It is a good t-shirt you're wearing, isn't it?
It's Effie's. I went to a wrestling show and it was Effie's Big Gay Brunch in Dallas over WrestleMania weekend, and it says everything's gear in Texas.
Of course,
a t-shirt I did not wear in Texas, lest I get a punch on the nose.
Let's talk about what was an amazing weekend in the Premier League football-wise. I mean, some incredible matches. Mm. We've got to start with the headline of the weekend: Manchester City 2-2. The big game. Everyone was looking forward to it. 1 point between the two before kickoff. Still 1 point between the two after the final whistle. But, you know, often with these matches, Lars, they're billed and there's so much hype and then they tend to let you down. But this did not do that. It lived up to the hype, didn't it?
Yeah, I find the encounters between these two doesn't often let us down. Mm. And this is going to sound slightly trite, but I do want to take a moment to point it out and just take note of it. Like, I don't support either of these teams. I don't support any of their rivals. I really don't care who wins the league.
I don't support what they stand for.
No, okay, well, that's a slightly different tangent that we don't need to get into. But just on a sporting sense, as a neutral, I'm just kind of grateful that the best two teams in the country and the world probably are both like really front foot, like really positive. Like, if one of these teams wanted to drain the life out of the game, I'm not sure they could even do it. Like, they'd have to
move their high line a bit further back.
Well, yeah, quite so. I mean, I guess Man City have it in them to just pass the ball around for a lot of time if they want to. But yeah, they're very proactive, very sort of, they want to get at people and they want to make things happen. Mm. And the games are rarely boring for that reason. It was incredibly entertaining to watch.
It was wonderful to watch. It was just non-stop, wasn't it? It was gripping.
Can you hear that noise right now? That is Hendo's knees this morning. I'm 31! Let me rest! He really had to put a shift in, didn't he? And he got better as the match went on, certainly in the second half. And it was a bloody amazing match.
It was absolutely bonkers. You know why I thought it was most bonkers? Mm. Is because these are the two best teams in the country, arguably the two best teams in Europe right now.
The world.
In the world. Yet, there were some bizarre things happening. Mm. I mean, what was Edison doing? What happened there?
He had it under control.
No,
it was all good.
No, he did not.
No reason to freak out. I got this.
There was just some weird things. I mean, some of the defending, I felt like there were nerves on that pitch. And I think that they were making some characteristic, particularly Liverpool defence in the first half, were making some uncharacteristic errors, which I kind of liked it. I liked the fact that they weren't both perfect and that we saw four goals, because can you imagine how dull it would have been if it was just 0-0 and they cancelled each other out with this lovely football?
And it makes you think, well, look, if they're going to be doing that against each other, they might drop, like Man City might drop points somewhere. So it could not be all over at this point, I would say.
Yeah, it's worth noting that Liverpool were properly on the back foot in the first half in particular. Mm. I thought they recovered really well. But I think I'm also impressed by the sort of loyalty they show to the game plan, in the sense that there's no sense, this is going a bit wrong for us, we better just sit in and ride this out. It's like, no, we're still going to push up, we're still going to go football. Like,
when Van Dijk is kind of like dropping passes and getting a bit confused, come on now.
Yeah.
Let's stop being silly.
Fabinho had a bit of a weird one. He's usually one of the best holding midfielders in the world. He wasn't that in this game. But I just think, having two teams are totally committed to this sort of let's just go at them thing, it makes for a very good entertainment.
Well, that's how Spurs beat Man City back in like February. Like, the really high line got in behind them. Both teams wanted to do that, and I think Jota's goal probably should have been kept out. Thiago should have gone for a second yellow. There was so many talking points in this bloody match.
Yeah, it was intense, wasn't it? I mean, I think the moment right at the end when Mahrez had that opportunity to score the winner for Man City.
That was so delicious.
What happened there, Lars?
Well, he kicked it over the bar. Specifically.
Thanks, Lars.
Mahrez
may have it. No, he went for the chip, didn't he? And that was not the right thing to do, I guess. I thought for sure he was going to do it.
Same. I was like, this is surely going in. Do you think Alisson just puts him off when he comes out as he does?
No, Peter Schmeichel was on Core Comp. So I was listening to Five Live and watching it on a...
Oh, you're one of those. You listened to...
I had Sky Sports subscription, but my father-in-law had logged in, so I couldn't... I'd just like to point that out. And my father-in-law had logged in, so I couldn't log in, so I had to go to other measures, and I cannot stand certain commentators. But Peter Schmeichel was like he was sure that it was all about the attending goalkeeper. But for me, I mean, Mahrez has the skill.
He would say that, wouldn't he?
I mean, Mahrez has the skill to put that in the net. It was a weird, weird finish, and it annoyed Pep. Oh, did it ever annoy Pep with his murder, murder, murder top, or whatever it said.
We love Pep annoyed. At the final whistle, all respect between the two managers, as we expected, and obviously in the build-up to the game, there was so much love and respect for each other, and you're the best. No, you're the best. No, you're the best. No, you're the best.
When in reality, they hate each other, because that's what they do.
What did you think of Pep's massive... I don't even know what you call it. Bear hug, handshake.
It was a no-look high five, wasn't it? Really? Because he sort of turned immediately and went bang. Yeah. It was just there.
It was mental, wasn't it? I was like, whoa. I'd have been quite like, whoa, I'd have been taken aback if I was Jurgen Klopp.
I think
there.
He was, because they said, oh, Pep, there's a lot of love on the touchline after the match. Pep was, Jurgen Klopp was like, I need to get out of here. I don't know what he's capable of. What's in that jacket?
I thought at the time, but no one's picked up on it, so maybe I'm reading too much into stuff, that Klopp was trying to put a slightly sly one in by really praising City's counter-attacking.
Yes, okay.
Right. I think that's one of those things that a highly strung Pep could go for.
Yeah.
Because he really doesn't like... I mean, counter-attacking is very much a swear word in the Guardiola household. Yeah. It's like a fiver in the bin immediately if you say the word counter-attack, I think. I think that's something he'd find quite insulting.
He actually said after the game as well, fantastic game. This is Pep Guardiola. Mm. Liverpool are a joy to watch. We dignified the Premier League.
We dignified them.
We dignified
them. Didn't need dignifying. I find that offensive, to be honest.
Dignifying.
Do we need? Does the Premier League need dignifying?
Does it?
Yeah. Well, it doesn't dignify itself frequently.
I mean, there's been a lot of chat over the weekend about sort of the greatness of this rivalry compared to other rivalries, and I think in terms of just a pure sporting level, you know, they're both unbelievable teams. I don't think we've had a situation where we've had pretty clearly the best two teams in the world. And I say this as the resident Europhile. I think that there's not much of a discussion there. Mm. And the last couple, I mean, four of the highest ever points totals in the Premier League were set by these two teams in the last couple of years. They're unbelievably good. But there isn't the aggro, really. I think ideologically, they might, maybe they don't like each other personally, because like you said, they're very competitive people. But ideologically, I think they admire and appreciate each other.
Yes. A couple of very modern managers playing a very modern football.
So I guess there's an interesting discussion to make about what makes a good rivalry. Like, you're not going to have the
filled stadiums,
you're not going to have the unhinged madness of the sort of 90s Arsenal United stuff and all that.
You need a few punches, don't you?
Because people are just like, because they're sort of well-rounded professional footballers who are like not, you know, complete head cases anymore. So, I mean, it isn't... Is that bad for the rivalry? I don't know.
You need players sort of crossing the floor, I suppose, and sort of slating their previous
employers. It's different. It's different, isn't it? It's a modern rivalry. I think traditional rivalries that we've seen in the Premier League, when you think of, you know, your Manchester United against Arsenal or Manchester United Chelsea of the past, like, those were the big proper rivalries, and they all had a bit of needle in them. You know, there was arguments between players, managers, all sorts, and you don't get that with this. But does that make it any less of a rivalry, or is it just a different type of rivalry? I think it's just a different type.
It's a construction, isn't it? I suppose it's a media construction, I suppose, to a certain extent.
Yeah, but anyway, they still exist. I mean, we'll get to Tottenham and Cristiano Ronaldo later, maybe. But there are fewer head cases in the game. I feel.
Yes.
I feel like because the level of football we're watching, the amount of running, the amount of pressing, the sort of tactical sophistication.
No time for anger.
There's no time for strange people. Like, you need to be a very serious professional.
Mahrez
to get
is
to
about
that
as
level.
Strange as it gets.
Yeah, exactly right. Like, you don't have the wackos anymore. Like, there's no they just don't make it. And there's never a sense that, like, at any moment De Bruyne could headbutt Trent Alexander-Arnold. Like that. Yeah. We're not at that kind of rivalry, and I wonder if those types don't.
It's all
make...
been trained out. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that bad or is it good?
Modern pop music. Everyone's too good, aren't they?
It's maybe like it's in terms of if you're just like watching the football, this is very good. But if you're trying to do a banter podcast, it's more challenging.
That's why I brought in my pogs.
It's so true. Look, in terms of how the title race is now going to shape up, then. Where we were prior to kickoff, Pep said they have to win all seven games, otherwise it will be over. But realistically, Liverpool are the ones that actually have to win all seven games, otherwise they can't overtake Manchester City.
It's hard to see where the pressure is, really.
Yeah,
isn't
like
it?
Yeah. So how do you see this shaping up? Who's more likely to drop points, Lars?
I think there's a complete toss-up. I think they're so close in terms of level that it's almost meaningless to sort of speculate into that. I think what both sides are saying, and I think he's completely right, is that both teams have to kind of assume the other will win the rest of their games and just kind of go from there. There's been a lot of discussion as well about, like, oh, who's got the most pressure on them. I think with one point between them, it doesn't matter, because they're both capable of winning the rest of their games. So you just kind of have to go at it and win, assume, yeah.
I think Sterling's got the most pressure on him because the crowd just don't seem to like him at all. They just do not see what
he brings.
He
was unlucky with his offside goal, though. It was so close. I know it's factual. I know it's factual now with offsides, with VAR, but it was so close.
But I don't understand, I don't understand why Man City fans can't understand what he brings apart from the goals. You know what I mean? He's a canvas stretcher. Mm. Try painting on an unstretched canvas, guys.
Yeah.
You can have cracked oil paint. Come on.
How do you see
a big problem in Greater Manchester,
it really is, yeah.
How do you see it shaping up, Pete? Who's more likely to drop points? Because the way I see it is when you look across the scope of the season, City are the team of the two who have failed to score in more games.
Yes.
So Liverpool score more, which means they're often less likely to lose, I suppose, whereas Man City are maybe more likely to draw 0-0. I think, off the top of my head, I'm pretty sure I'm right in saying that City have failed to score in four matches this season and Liverpool have done it less than that.
Do you not think that Man City's kind of European exertions will be more of a distraction because that's the thing they want?
Yes.
So
why don't we ask our European expert in the studio about that?
Well, Jules, Europe is a big continent and with many different countries in it. Sorry.
That's true. You've been doing your research.
He knew you were in today.
I think you're not wrong in that City are probably a little bit more focused on the Champions League, maybe. So if there's a case of a bit of rotation, they would probably... But I think they're in the letters. No, it's not like...
You look at the fixtures and go, oh,
it's not like... And first of all, like even if Liverpool rotate a bit, I mean, they're not going to feel the weakened team in the Champions League, are they? And even if they do, I mean, both teams have got a squad. No, I think it's very tight. And I actually think it's a little bit tighter than the bookies are suggesting. I think the bookies have City as quite clear favourites to win the league now.
Yeah, they do.
And I don't fully agree with that. Right. I think it's much closer to 50-50 still.
Yeah. Lars's top tip. Not as far as a top tip.
Let's call it that, yeah. Okay.
Well, as if we...
I just didn't see it coming. So I've got to be ready for anything.
We loved that so much. We get to watch it all again in the FA Cup semi-finals next weekend. So there we go. We get to see it all again.
We haven't had this before, have we? Again, I said it earlier, they're probably the best two teams in the world. And they're both going for a treble, like right. It's quite something. Mm. It's just a and
Liverpool fans will tell you it's a quadruple.
Yeah, and Miguel Delaney occasionally on the continent on this network made the point that this is kind of the Clásico at the moment, not in a cultural sense.
Okay.
Obviously, it doesn't have the cachet and the history and all of it, but in the sense that these are the best two teams in the world, and you can't really dispute that from a sporting sense. And that's interesting because for a long time. The Premier League was like, we kept hearing, oh, it's the best league in the world. But we always had a sneaking sensation that there are better teams outside of the...
Yeah.
That is not true now. I think these two teams are the best teams in the world, as I've now said about seven times. I'm going to stop saying it now.
We'll move on, shall we?
It was
amazing to watch, though. Really, really good. Now, Liverpool and Manchester City have cantered way ahead of Chelsea now, who are destined for third place in the Premier League, it seems. Although there was a little bit of speculation about whether or not Arsenal could catch them up until the last week. But they absolutely battered Southampton 6-0 on Saturday, Chelsea. Every time they went forward, they looked like they were going to score. Timo Werner hit the woodwork three times in the first half.
Yeah.
It was absolutely ridiculous.
That's close than he usually gets.
But he'd had an impressive game, despite the fact that he hit the woodwork three times. He made a massive difference to Chelsea going forward. Southampton were poor, obviously. Fraser Forster made so many saves in the game, and that tells the full story. It was 6-0. It was absolutely crazy. But Chelsea needed to bounce back, didn't they, Lars, after they conceded seven goals in two matches, losing in the Champions League in the week, losing to Brentford last weekend. So they needed that.
Yes, and I worried for them a little bit, totally unnecessarily, as it turns out, just because Tuchel's history at Dortmund, at Mainz actually a little bit, at Dortmund, at Mainz, and at PSG, is that he does kind of fall out with people a little bit. His reputation is very much, I think, Hansi Watzke from Dortmund, the CEO there, said that he's like he's a great coach but a difficult person, like that's his whole thing. And then he went to Paris, and the French press guys were like, "What are you talking about? He's lovely," they said. And the Germans were like, "Yeah, give it time." And then when things started going wrong at PSG, he became less lovely. So there's always a sense with him. Like, I think he can. We've seen he's been very good at Chelsea in terms of how he's dealt with the situation they're in. He speaks very well. He's obviously done a good job. But he has a very cantankerous side. And I think once they start losing games and he has a sense that the players aren't doing what he wants them to do, that side can come out very quickly. And I thought we saw a little bit of that after Real Madrid. He was very defeatist. I thought, oh dear, is it going in
Did you hear what he said after that game? He said he had to eat an immense amount of chocolate while he was rewatching the Madrid highlights in order to calm down.
Because what I'm saying, I was worried we're going down a spiral of doom here now. But of course, not so much. Beating winning 6-0. Maybe it was all the chocolate. Maybe he's found a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
Maybe just, yeah.
Well, the actual quote says, you sit there in the middle of the night and the amount of chocolate I needed was immense to go through the match again to compensate.
Immense.
You start writing and writing and writing and you realise you're writing more and more. So there's a writing aspect as well.
Wow.
I think that was a plot line to Sex and the City.
He sounds like he's been a freelance football writer, I have to say.
It's a bit carry in Sex and the City, I think.
Also this weekend, my Brighton boys gave Tottenham a helping hand in their fight for a Champions League place by beating Arsenal 2-1. What a result for the Seagulls. I mean, it was absolutely amazing. I was in studio at working and there is nothing better than Brighton scoring when I'm on score.
Oh, there was a clip on
absolutely lose my shit.
There was a clip on the WhatsApp of you sort of waving your arms around. I've noticed that green screen behind you. That's all I'm saying. I can put that in anything.
Oh no.
In the dock.
Don't do me dirty. Don't do it. Look, it was an amazing result for Brighton. We hadn't scored. Well, we'd scored one goal in 7 games and that was scored by Lewis Dunk. So to get 2 in this match it was a relief mainly, I think, when we scored the first goal. I was like, yes, we've actually scored. Yeah. This is good. To win was amazing.
Cracking goals, though.
Bloody are brilliant
cracking
goals.
Mwepu
is such a good player. We've really missed him since he's been out. His nickname is The Computer.
Ooh.
You've got Mwepan right there.
I know.
And you've gone for The Computer.
Yeah. Moises Caicedo made his debut.
You can't just bring that. You have to say why.
Yeah,
there has
why?
To be a reason.
Well, The Computer.
Yeah.
I think the reason, I'm not entirely sure if this is correct, but from what Brighton fans talk about, I think the reason is just because he's super intelligent.
Yeah.
I think that's the reason.
It's not because
I think there's anything too like fun about it.
It's spreads like viruses.
He immediately freezes if you ask him to do more than one thing.
And actually,
multitasker.
Speaking of computers,
Amiga 500.
He crashes a lot.
the Brighton Hove Albion admin have had a very good weekend. They accidentally uploaded a picture of a plug socket to Instagram when they were meant to just upload a carousel of player photos.
Right.
They accidentally included a plug socket. So all of the Brighton fans have been taking the piss out of it all weekend. So there was a lot of plug sockets going around on Twitter and Instagram. In case you were wondering, because loads of people are like, what's with all these plug sockets everywhere?
Yeah.
That's the reason why.
I mean, admin might think that's a terrible mistake. I like to call it a near miss. In terms of what's in your camera roll.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a plug socket would be the least embarrassing.
It's Russian roulette, but every chamber is loaded.
Yeah. Have you got your phone on you, Pete?
I haven't got my phone on me.
I was going to ask you, what's the last thing in your camera roll?
We went for a dog walk.
I was about to say, it'll be the dog.
There's a lot of dogs.
What's the last one on your last?
Dogs under a boardwalk.
Definitely the dog.
Someone fetch me my phone.
It's as if I knew I was going to ask.
Dog confirmed.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, look at her. She's lovely, though.
It's as if I knew I was going to ask this question because the last thing I took a picture of was actually the football ramble microphone. Covering up what really was the last thing in my camera. Oh, by the way, I was saying Moises Caicedo, last thing I wanted to say. It was his Brighton debut.
He got an assist
and he got man of the match.
What a
player, right?
No, I was just interrupting you to say what a midfield your team is about to put together.
I know.
Like if you can keep both Bissouma and Mwepo over the summer, Caicedo looking really good on his debut. Mm. Those three, I think, that looks like a top half midfield to me, more so than, very good.
I think originally the plan was to bring Caicedo in to actually replace Bissouma should he leave, which is obviously still speculative at the moment. But as you say, I mean, when the team sheet came in, everyone kind of looked at me as if to say, Jules, how's Graham Potter going to set this up? I was like, don't fucking look at me. I've got a clue how he's going to set this team up. There's like 8 midfielders in this team. It's crazy.
It's the Pascal Gross wingback move that we don't always see coming, which should make sense because he's got a really good delivery on him.
He does.
But he's not the most mobile is the word I'm looking for. But I guess you've got the computer and Mwepu next to him.
Exactly.
Mwepu's instant control for the first character. He was just off.
Brilliant.
And then whacked in.
And he's versatile too. He can play in lots of different positions, which I like about him. What happened to Arsenal? That's
what
most people want to talk about, not the Seagulls.
Oh, I don't know.
What do you reckon happens?
Like they look a bit tired, don't they? They just look like they've overexerted. They've got quite a thin squad and a young squad, and it's just like it's catching up for them. I think the season can't end quickly enough for them. Really.
I agree. I think the squad depth is a huge issue here. So I watched this and I saw the Palace game as well, and I think they were slightly different boo-boos for Arsenal. The Palace game for me looked like a very classic case of just slightly too many players having a bad day at the same time. Mm. And then once you go behind and you get on the back foot against a very, you know, excitable and energetic Palace team at night game in front of that crowd, you know, it's tough to get back in. Mm. Whereas this one was more worrying in sense that, but I think it's shortcomings of the squad, right? Because Tierney is out and you don't trust Nuno Tavares at all. So you move Granit Xhaka down to left back, but that means he's also missing. So your entire midfield is now missing. And I think the double pivot of Martin Ødegaard and Lukonga, not ideal. Lukonga, bless him, still young, could develop into a player. Martin Ødegaard, I don't think, should play deep in the pivot. I think he's a number 10. I think those two, as a double pivot against the much-discussed Mrepo, Bissouma, Caicedo triple threat, I think that midfield battle doesn't work out very well. So I just think there was a little bit lack of leadership and personality here. And yeah, no good replacement for Partey. No party, as it turns out.
I agree completely. I think Tierney's a massive miss for his leadership, but also deliveries into the box. Obviously, his defensive abilities as well. And I just think they really missed him in the last couple of games. They're probably pretty rocked by the Arsenal, the Crystal Palace result as well on Monday night, losing that game. Heading into this, it was almost like the pressure started to creep up on them because they knew Spurs are in good form, Tottenham are coming for them, being their biggest rivals, the North London Derby being now finally scheduled for a couple of weeks' time. I felt like it was there for the taking for Brighton. And actually, Brighton have a decent... they have a decent record against Arsenal in terms of, you know, being one of the traditional bigger sides in the Premier League. It's probably the team that Brighton have got the best record against. I actually had a feeling that Arsenal were going to drop points in this game.
It's not about this season for Arsenal, though, is it? They've coped incredibly for the change that's been made in the squad, and they're so young and they're just going to get better, and I'm really enjoying watching them. And look, if you can just enjoy the 5 minute period where they're trying to figure out whether VAR is going to rule out God, just enjoy the downtime, guys. All right,
that took far too long, didn't it?
I gotta admit that I'm often a VAR apologist, but I think that got on my nerve as well.
They do still have one game in hand on Tottenham, and Spurs won again this weekend, and they were really impressive yet again. I think Son, Kane, Kulusevski, them three together, you just know they're going to score pretty much in every game for the rest of this season. 4-0 victory over Aston Villa. And Antonio Conte was his typical sinister self post-match, should I say. He said, the winner has to feel when there is the blood on your opponent.
And he then said you have blood to, like five times.
And then you have to try to kill your opponent. It's absolutely chilling.
Didn't he sort of got blood? And then he sort of thought about blood. And he said blood again. And he just kept saying blood because he was just, I can't get past this blood word. Blood.
I love Antonio Conte. He's a fascinating character, Lars. I mean, we've seen so many different sides to him.
Yes. well, crucially, he's a very good coach, and Tottenham have gotten quite a lot better. And I was bemoaning the lack of sort of head cases in the game. I think Christian Romero is definitely good. I mean, what Tottenham may have lost in the shithousery stakes when Lamella left, I mean, Christian Romero
and
is ready to...
Yeah.
But Serge Aurier is a different form of shithousery. It's some sort of, it seems to just affect his own team more than the opponent, which is a concern. Tottenham were slightly lucky here, it should be said. Villa were significantly better than them in the first half. But they have a very good goalkeeper in Lloris, or certainly one who had a good day at the office. And there's a thing to be said for having strikers who are just really good at kicking the ball. Just forwards who will shoot very well. so you need fewer chances to score occasionally. That is good.
Yeah, Sonny's at his best at the moment, isn't he? And as is Harry Kane. It's just wonderful to watch Tottenham at the moment when they're going forward. Right, that is the top half of the table kind of sorted. So Tottenham probably in pole position to get that fourth spot now, 3 points ahead of Arsenal. Manchester United have dropped way further down after their defeat at Goodison Park to Everton. So after the break, we're going to focus on the bottom half of the table and how the relegation fight is shaping up.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites.
So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Which decision in particular annoys you?
Where do you want to start?
Don't you worry, we will be coming on to the lovely Neil Warnock, who this weekend decided that his time in management was over. I know, sad times. We are going to relive some of our favourite Neil Warnock memories at the end, so stick around for that. For now, though, welcome back to the Football Ramble. It's Jules, Lars and Pete here with you on this Monday, recapping everything from the weekend. Before we get to your emails, let's see how we got on in Betway's 4-to-score. Remember, entry to Betway's 4-to-score is free. Each week, pick the first goal scorer in Betway's 4 selected matches for your chance to win the weekly 50 grand jackpot, and make sure your selections are always submitted before the first game of the weekend. Further terms and conditions apply. Right, game one was Brentford against West Ham. Pete, you picked Ivan Toney, which was a good pick.
It was a good pick.
Score,
he did score, yes.
But he didn't score first,
no,
unfortunately.
He didn't.
It was Brian Bwemo who scored. I think that's his first goal in 14 matches, but he's been really good lately.
Picks his bloody matches, didn't he?
Back on the score sheet. Game two, Leicester against Crystal Palace. Andy Brassel picked Conor Gallagher. The result was Ademola Lookman. Game three was Norwich against Burnley. A surprise result in this one. Norwich beating Burnley by 2-0. Kate actually picked Wout Weghorst, but the result was Pierre-Lys Malou, who I don't think anyone would have picked to be the first goal scorer in that game. Game four was the big one, Man City against Liverpool. Marcus picked Sadio Mane. The result was Kevin De Bruyne. So there we go. We got 0 once again. Right, we will be back with another round of 4-to-score on the preview show this Friday. But
thanks,
now,
Kit.
Now it is time for this.
Enjoyable. From Mark. Hello, Mark. After the chat about what happens to losing finalists' shirts, I wanted to bring something that happened to my local club in Germany over the weekend. Hertha Berlin lost 4-1 to rivals Union in front of a packed house on Saturday. At full time, the Hertha players were told by the ultras to take their shirts off and lay them on the pitch in front of the section as an apology. Oh. The players then conducted their post-match interviews, not only with having the ignominy of a 4-1 defeat from their derby rivals, but also literally having their own kit seized from them.
So they had to do all of their interviews topless.
Yeah, I mean,
I'll watch that.
Yeah, but that's for different reasons. Why would you do that?
That's I know odd.
That. I mean, Hertha Berlin are a disgrace.
Because I'm
trying not to swear here, but they're an unbelievably bad team.
I remember going to see Hertha about 10 years ago with the rest of the Ramble. I got unholy amounts of alcohol down my gullet, and they were terrible. They lost, I think, 4-1 actually, and we took ages to get back into the centre of town. It was rubbish. People were smashing windows on the tube. It was rubbish. I hate Hertha Berlin, even though I bought one of their hats.
But yeah.
In summary.
But the European context here is that...
I don't need it! I bought a hat, lads! Don't need the European context! It was a cold day! I got currywurst on it!
Currywurst is real. Currywurst, better than Hertha Berlin.
Yes!
But the last few years, they've been spending a lot of money. They've had this investor come in and say, you know, Berlin should have a big city club. That's sort of been their context.
Yeah.
And they've just been getting worse and worse with all the money. During the pandemic, they could actually spend money, which no one else could, and they've just gotten worse. And now they're in the real danger of getting relegated. And to fix things, they've brought in Felix Magath. So, I mean, if any team deserves to go down, if any team deserves to have fans have a go, Hertha Berlin, arguably the most shameful team in Europe at the moment, and I think the fans are fully entitled to demand the shirts.
In a big, silly stadium.
Oh, wonderful. Right, show at footballramble.com or tweet us at footballramble if there's anything you'd like to send in. And don't forget, Pep Talks is on Wednesday. Any dilemmas you've got, send them in to us as well. Right, relegation movers. Let's talk about the bottom half of the table and who's going to stay up, who's going to go down, because it was all a little bit weird this weekend. I don't think I saw many of these results coming, personally. Let's start with the first game on Saturday, which was Everton 1, Manchester United 0. Everton were disciplined and energetic, even with 32-year-old Fabian Delph in the middle of the park.
Throwing shade on Delph.
It was a largely awful game of football, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, from what I saw. To be fair, I think the Football Ramble, aka me, on Friday or Thursday, whenever it was, I did say that I thought Everton would edge this one simply because it's a home match.
Yeah. Mm.
What they need is to make all of their away games for the rest of the season feel like home games, and they will survive. Next game is at Anfield, full of Scousers. That's easy. That's going to feel like a home game.
Like a home game.
Leicester City, little bit more difficult. I'm thinking Danny Cadamadri scarf, maybe a Lee Carsley mural, something like that. Just something that's going to make the King Power feel like Goodison. Some way to make it feel like a home match.
That would maybe be my favourite vandalism in a very long time. If someone snuck into the King Power in the middle of the night and made it,
painted a Danny Cadamadri.
Yeah, a Lee Carsley mural. No one expects that.
No one will ever expect it.
I mean, it's exactly the result Everton needed, because my God, after that defeat in the week on Wednesday at Turf Moor to Burnley, it almost looked doomed for Frank Lampard and his side. It looked as though Burnley were the team with the momentum that were going to somehow, well, everyone expected them to beat Norwich, which we'll come on to, which they didn't do, and that they were going to be the ones climbing out of the relegation zone this weekend, but it wasn't to be. So now Everton, with that victory, are now 4 points clear of the bottom three, put themselves in a bit of a healthier position heading into the run-in. And it was Anthony Gordon who scored the goal, although should we credit it to Harry Maguire?
Why not? Let's have a giggle.
It was just another bad day for him, wasn't it? I mean, how's your luck when that goes in off you deflected? It's just not good, is it?
It's not ideal. Let me be the first to let everyone know, listening to the Football Ramble, that you and Lars were having a heated discussion as to which Manchester United players would get into any other squads in the Premier League right
not
now.
Not the Premier League.
Sorry,
I was comparing
top six,
it to the other top six teams.
Sorry,
I just think the team is a little bit overrated, is what I think, because there are quite a few bad players in the squad. But that's kind of besides. I want to, before we move on, actually give a bit of like credit to Frank Lampard, because we were quite, last time I was on this pod, we were quite mean about him, because I think it was after the Palace game where he said some very strange things after the game. he was basically, I think, suggesting that your entire team might be eunuchs is just not really what I think it's really rogue from a man management perspective. But just the decision to have Fabian Delph sit in front of the back four is not an obvious move from a coach. But it really worked out. He played well, and United struggled to break Everton down, and he deserves credit for taking a slightly strange and unexpected decision and working out.
Well, according to our notes, the supercomputer alert.
What does Mwepu have to do with this?
I know, Mwepu's on there.
Leave him out of this.
Damn, he's reduced Everton's chances of relegation to 30%. 30%.
All right. Thank you, Enoch. Oh,
thank you very much for that, yeah. Enoch. I think back to what me and Lars were discussing, I was saying that when you actually look at the teams that are fighting for the final Champions League spot in in the Premier League. So fighting for that fourth spot across the board, really, if you look at the full squad, I just think that this Manchester United team do have quality players in there. Not on current form, because on current form, someone, for example, like Marcus Rashford, a couple of seasons ago, he'd start every game and he was unbelievable and he's an excellent player. And obviously something's going on there because he's obviously not playing very well at the moment at all. But I think in the squad, there's certainly a lot of talent there. And I think they're massively underperforming their capabilities. And I don't know whose fault that is, but when you look at what Ralph Rangnick's done since he's come in, okay, the results have probably been way better than the performances. They've actually managed to get some results out of games that you're like, oh, they don't really deserve that. Mm. But actually, I think that a manager who is probably the next permanent manager at Manchester United, and it looks like that's going to be Ten Hag from all the reports we're hearing at the moment, surely can get a lot better out of those players that are currently in this squad. That's my opinion anyway. I just think they're massively underachieving.
Have we been saying this for 5 years, though?
Yes.
With every manager. Yeah.
But it's just my point would be that the squad is a really sort of weird mishmash of things. Now, with regards to Rangnick, I think he's the way they're using him is very strange, United, because he is someone who has a proven track record of building clubs over time, first and foremost. And he's also a football ideologue. Like, he's someone who believes incredibly passionately in one way of playing, which is to press very high. You know, everyone works really hard and runs a lot. It's not what this current Man United team wants to do, right?
Yes.
So I would when he was brought in, like, getting Ralph Rangnick in and giving him 3 years to fix your broken football club could be good. Mm. Getting Ralph Rangnick in as a coach for Ronaldo FC for 6 months is a terrible idea.
It's a terrible idea.
So I thought there was a long-term idea here, but it turns out, no, they just wanted... No. And I think he's completely unsuited to that.
Yeah,
I think,
agreed.
Like, Cristiano Ronaldo can still do very good things on a football pitch, but what he cannot do is press and run around a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think you can have him up front for a Ralph Rangnick team. That's not how he wants his teams to play. So it's a complete mismatch in that regard.
I don't think the fans have bought into Ralph Rangnick at all, though. And I don't think Ralph Rangnick has at times helped that. After the game, he said that Manchester United don't deserve to play Champions League football.
They don't.
They don't. They don't. It's true. I'm not sure if the fans want to hear that, though. He also delivered a glorious line elsewhere. He said, with all respect to Everton, because they have a good team, but if you don't score against a team who conceded 3 goals against Burnley, you cannot expect to get anything out of it.
Name check previous matches.
It's true. I mean, he's just calling things like he's either. I think there have been a fair few of those with Rangnick, where he said things that are clearly true, but maybe if you're a United fan or a United executive, you don't want your head coach saying these things. I think there's been a few cases of that.
Yeah.
On the subject of Everton and Burnley, I watched Burnley at the weekend. I don't think they know how to win a football game. I think they might have forgotten how to win a football game. Sean Dyche.
Yeah. Yeah, it's bizarre, is it? We'll come on to that in a minute. Just want to just finish off everything about Manchester United, because David De Gea said the performance was a disgrace. Cristiano Ronaldo showed his frustration by smashing some kid's phone.
Cool. What an icon.
What's he done that for?
I just think it's, you know, it's just nice that the mask slips, except it doesn't slip. He's always like this. It's just funny. It's endlessly funny.
I think the apology was unconvincing, but also the idea that he's going to bring him to a game at Old Trafford. I was like, how old was that phone? I mean, it really, this could be fair value for the damage. It really depends on
Nokia
how old.
3210, yeah. Actually, they're probably more expensive these days.
Yeah, it's quite retro, yeah. But it really depends on what kind of phone it is, whether that is fair. Also depends on the seats. You know, does he get a go in one of the VIP boxes? Mm, I mean,
more importantly, he was an Everton fan, wasn't he? so no thanks, mate.
He's like, why do I want to go to Old
Trafford? Yeah, bugger off.
Actually, probably would like to. It's where they've won one of their only games this season.
True,
oh, no,
actually,
they haven't. That was at Goodison, wasn't it? Of
yes,
course it was.
Yeah.
But yeah, just to clarify, the statement that you're talking about there, Lars, Ronaldo said, I would like to apologise for my outburst, and if possible, I would like to invite this supporter to watch a game at Old Trafford as a sign of fair play and sportsmanship.
I mean, it's criminal damage, isn't it? It's not an outburst, is it? It's criminal damage.
So there's a very smashing things and then compensating them by giving them something they might not want isn't really what I associate with fair play and sportsmanship. But you're
right though, Lars. There aren't any absolute psychopaths in
just
the league
anymore.
Just
get him a phone.
You know, 20 years ago, I was jumping
that's
in the
true,
stands.
Where's now getting? Smashing the phone is.
A trip to iFix, it bugger off. Boring.
I mean, I have confessed to enjoying smashing things on this podcast before, but I would not smash a young boy's phone.
You attend weddings to smash plates. Don't you? The wedding crashes literally.
Right, let's talk Burnley then, Lars, as you mentioned, because they couldn't back up their victory over Everton in the week with a win at Burnley at Norwich. Sorry, and Norwich have now kept two clean sheets in a row. They've picked up 4 points in their last two matches. Could they do it? Can they escape? Can they survive? Thanks for both looking at me blankly.
No,
I'm looking at it. I'm looking at it. Fictionless. Man United, Newcastle, Villa, West Ham. They all seem pretty doable
Leicester,
right now,
Wolves,
don't they?
And Spurs. Probably not then.
Well, they could get a few points, but they're probably not going to. They're probably not going to leap 7 points. Yeah, no, they're not going to do it.
Yeah.
I suppose, but to be fair, if they keep scoring shitty double deflected goals 9 minutes in, I think they've got every chance.
What's going to happen to Burnley then, Lars? Do you think that they are going to go down? Is this their year?
Yeah, so I went early with this. I made the right run, but too early. I went straight into offside. But I just think I can't get over Sean Dyche's sort of after the Everton win saying, you know, I told them at halftime, you know, they don't know how to win a game. These, it was like, mate, you've won 3 in the last 25.
What in
God's name are you talking about? And also, like. But Dyche also said, you know, it's tough when you're down there. I've been down there. Like, again, mate, you are down there. I've been, what are you talking about? You're in huge trouble. And that could have been a transformative win for them. But instead, they've lost to Norwich, which is pretty embarrassing. Mm. And things are not looking good for Burnley. And I think in the wider scheme of things, you worry a little bit for Burnley because they were bought by new owners fairly recently. And I do believe that was a so-called leveraged buyout so that the club was loaded with quite a lot of debt by the new owner. So it's a bad time for them to get relegated. Mm-hmm. It's no good time to get relegated. This is a particularly bad time to get relegated.
Yeah, they don't know how to win games, as you say, and neither do Watford by the looks of it. Not even with good old Roy Hodgson in charge. It is looking pretty bad for them.
And
they
his passes.
Lost. Yeah.
He should be starting himself, I reckon.
Know. Yeah, I think
based on what we've seen. Yeah.
They lost 3-0 to Leeds. Leeds have learnt how to win games under Jesse Marsh as well. And actually, I think one of the more underrated goals of the weekend was Rafinha's opener for Leeds. I think it was an amazing goal.
Knee slide was terrible afterwards. His knee got caught in the grass. And that looked like an injury.
No. So as things are shaping up, it does. Well, at the moment, it's Norwich, Watford and Burnley in that bottom three. Everton pulling away. Leeds have pulled away. Brentford have certainly pulled away after this weekend as well. So there we go. I'm sure it is. There's still some more twists and turns to come with roughly around 7 matches of the season left.
Hopefully not Rafinha's knee joints.
I'm surprised they're allowed to do the knee slides. Honest to God, I as a club, you'd consider outlawing the knee slides.
Well, they should be.
Because that is an injury waiting to happen.
Yeah.
No. And just in this, because we know all about the sort of weird contract clauses and stuff people aren't allowed to do. Famously, we were discussing before the show, Stefan Schwartz of Sunderland, who was not allowed to go to space, which I think was just not a very useful.
Accidentally went to space, though. He'd be so annoyed.
Yeah.
We've all done it. Every night out,
let he who has not fallen asleep in a weather balloon cast the first stone. But I just think, looking at that knee slide from Rafinha, if I'm Leeds, I don't want him doing that ever again.
No.
So get it into the contract. No knee slides.
Yeah, agreed. Right, that is everything on the pitch in the Premier League. Some sad news to end on, but I think we're going to have a bit of a giggle about it. And that is, after 1,603 matches and 8 promotions, 73-year-old Neil Warnock has confirmed that he is retiring from football management.
Yeah. Aww. Well, he sort of said,
Uncle Neil.
Because he can't find a job before the end of the season. It's like, you were only going to get like 5 matches maximum, Neil. Come on.
Do you think his time is really over, Lars? Or
no,
do you reckon he's
got
a call up on
the
way?
I think he'll change his mind pretty soon. But I do. I mean, what would Neil Warnock be doing if he was? I mean, he might go
fishing
on the punditry, maybe.
Yeah, I reckon he will do a bit of punditry. Oh, well, maybe I'll get to work with him.
Yeah,
I'd like a travel show with Neil Warnock.
Imagine.
Like Travel Man, but with Neil Warnock.
Yeah, eating foreign food. And I don't like this.
Well, but then maybe he will like it. Maybe this is the thing.
I mean, he must have some incredible... he's already told some stories in the little bit of media punditry that he's done. But I mean, he must have so many up his sleeve.
I listened to 5 minutes of his audiobook on Audible today And I might go back to the well, see if I can have a listen, clip some things out. But it's just him going, talking about how to get the best out of his misfiring QPR team.
I think Neil Warnock and Richard Ayoade travelling the world is the TV show we need.
I think, better than that, I think, what about Neil Warnock and Mike Dean? After he's also said he's quitting this. Imagine them two together.
He's too busy getting ready for Strictly.
Warnock.
Yeah. I mean, Mike Dean is going on Strictly. That's a when, not if.
Neil Warnock on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. I'd like to see that.
Eating stuff, eating lizards.
Be good with it. Don't like it.
Don't like it.
Get Sean Dyche already fond of eating worms, as we all know.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, it's amazing, really, when you look back at his career. He's played for a fair few clubs, and he's managed so many. I think he actually said over the weekend he can't remember all the clubs he's managed. There's a few in there that he's forgotten. But he started at Northern Premier League side Gainsborough Trinity in 1981. I wasn't even born yet.
Oh, well, and that's the real managing. Standard. Do you know Jules Breach wasn't born then?
Yeah, although Luke likes to tell everyone that I am over 40. I am not over 40. He says he's not lost the enthusiasm for management, but he just wants to spend a bit more time with his family now, basically. So we wish him well, don't we?
He's probably an absolute stranger to them. How are you again?
Well, there we go. Farewell to Neil Warnock.
Farewell, Neil.
Let's hope that we see him on the telly soon, or who knows, back in the dugout if he gets a call up. Right.
I can't wait to get out of it, if I'm honest. What he said about the EU. Can't wait to get out of it, if I'm honest.
Right, that's all from us today. That was a pleasure, Pete and Lars. Enjoyed that.
There was a lot of football, and the football was good.
Yeah,
it was.
And we have talked about it now, so that's good. It's a good start to the week, I have to say.
It is, and now we head into another week of European action, all of the second legs, which we will talk about all week on the Football Ramble. So thanks once again for listening to the Football Ramble, part of the Acast Creator Network. We will see you tomorrow.
Ta-da.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.